If only there was a way to engineer the human eyeball to watch 10 different screens at once. Keep your eyes and ears on every game with Sportsnet tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet tonight. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. George Russick, Brent Gunning here for the next hour. We're here for a good time, not a long time, until we hand things over to Eric Smith and Paul Jones, who will have the call of the Raptors and Bulls. Three games left in the season for your Toronto Raptors. That's the melancholy news if you're a fan of the Raps, who obviously were eliminated from playoff contention. But good news, the Blue Jays continue to win games, despite the fact they've been riddled with injuries this season. They hammered the Atlanta Braves, sweeping the season series 6-0 after today's big 8-4 victory in Atlanta. Shai Davidi from Sportsnet.ca will join us in about 25 minutes. And the Maple Leafs played a game last night that I don't know if any Leaf fan actually even cared about the result, really. An overtime loss in Ottawa to the Senators in one of the most meaningless games, I think, in recent memory for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Guns, good evening. It's always fun doing a show with you. Where does that game rank last night in your care factor as a Leaf fan?
I didn't know it was possible for me to get there with Leafs games, but is it possible to have a negative care factor? I had it on a lot of bouncing back and forth with the Jays, though. Yeah, just a nothing game. Please don't get hurt. I don't even know what I'm supposed to take out of what I'm seeing from Freddie Anderson. I don't even know how much all that matters. So, yeah, that was the only kind of interesting thing. But when the team is playing the way they were, and we all understand why they kind of played that way, it's really hard to kind of get a gauge on what you're getting in out of the goaltender. And that's the only thing there was to take out of it. So yeah, it was just a very listless night at the Canadian Tire Center.
Yeah, and obviously the number one goal was to get Freddie Anderson to face NHL shooters, and he did that, and I thought he was okay last night. He looked a little shaky at times, and that's to be expected from a first start since March. But obviously when the Stanley Cup playoffs get going against the Habs, it'll be a week tonight, game one at Scotiabank, Leafs and Habs for the first time since 1979. Oh, by the way, Brent, did you know that the Leafs and Habs haven't played in the playoffs since 1979? Has that been mentioned yet? Have you heard anything about that?
I not only have I not heard that, I definitely didn't have to do back-to-back reports on it for 680 News. That's how unaware I am of it. I definitely didn't hear about that at all. No one's mentioned that fact to me.
Yeah. We're all excited for the Stanley Cup playoffs to finally begin. And can we just shoot the North Division into the sun forever? I don't want to be Johnny cynical. I don't even know what that makes no sense. I don't want to be too cynical because I never was crazy about the North Division idea since the onset because I knew we would quickly
get Johnny cynical. Johnny cynical sounds like a bad guy in a 60s movie. It's like, oh, watch out. There's Johnny cynical. He's got his leather jacket. You better watch out.
Oh. Right,
sorry.
Go ahead. Oh, I'm Johnny cynical. She going to rob that bank. She actually, that's more like 1920s bank robber speak. Anyway, so North Division fatigue. Thank goodness it's done. And you want to talk about electric factory games when the Vancouver Canucks playing out their schedule. Like what?
At 3:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah. The NHL just moves it to some times where it's like, please, let's just get this over with so we can finally move on with their lives. I am looking forward to their Saturday game. Forget that the Bruins and Capitals play game one of their series.
Who cares?
The Canucks are in action Saturday in a regular season game. I think for the first time in NHL history that we'll have regular season and playoff games at the same time. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's the case.
I honestly, I can't believe it's happening. Like, I understand why it has to happen, but it's the most useless product of all time. Nobody wants anything to do with it. Everyone's going to be terrified to get hurt. Like, it's going to be... We talked about that listless Sens-Leafs game. I don't even want to know what these Canucks-Flames games are going to look like.
Yeah, and for some reason tonight, Flames and Canucks, for some reason, Calgary's starting Jacob Markstrom in net. Why would you do that?
As punishment for not living up to the deal, apparently. That's the only reason I could possibly think
of. you want to win? Like, you don't want to lose to potentially get a better draft pick? Like, I don't understand that situation or scenario. Well, let's put our high-priced number one goaltender in against Vancouver. Why? Like, you're eliminated. It means nothing. Start play some kids.
Somebody. There's not a primu goalie of sorts floating around there for Calgary. Somebody. What about the Zamboni driver? What's he up to? That was a fun story. That was a fun game. Maybe they can find their own David Ayers out there, and then I'll have to stop hearing about it. Put somebody in the net other than Markstrom. Like, they should be, the guys should be having a card tournament for who doesn't have to play in these games. I cannot imagine the kind of internal conversations happening for some of these teams about who's having to play, who's having to get in, what's going to happen. It's just it's honestly disaster waiting to happen.
God bless Thatcher Demko in net for the Canucks too, but God bless those Flames players who play for Daryl Sutter. That guy is serious about winning, when it's completely meaningless games. Yeah, he's serious. Like, that guy is as serious about as a heart attack. He wants to win games for the Calgary Flames. It doesn't matter that they're completely and totally meaningless. We'll talk Blue Jays with Shai Davidi coming up in about 20 minutes, but lots of things here. I was thinking about the Maple Leafs in the playoffs and how they're such an overwhelming favorite to destroy Montreal in the first round of the playoffs based on what a mismatch it is down the middle of the ice. Like, it's not even in the same stratosphere what the Habs are putting out there in the center ice position compared to what the Leafs can put out there. But I wanted to ask you, heading into the postseason, what are you more concerned about as a Leafs fan, the power play or the goaltending?
If it's in terms of the bigger concern, like the thing that I think is the more of a weakness, it's the power play. But I think the goaltending is the bigger concern, because I think that teams have won Stanley Cups before without the power play going at all cylinders. Auston Matthews just scored, 41 in 50-some-odd games, and the power play hasn't been going very well for most of that. This team has kind of proved that they can win without the power play clicking. I was about to say on all cylinders, just even clicking, just even making one sound when you turn the key over in the ignition. Remember when cars had keys. But I think it's goaltending for me, because it's just, that's the boogeyman that lurks around the corner for every hockey team. I think even guys we feel super confident about, like, think about Hellebuck in Winnipeg, all the conversations we've had about him, and look how he's looked the past run for that team. So I think that goaltending is just the kind of, it's out there, it's lurking, it can change at any time, and that's why it's the bigger concern to me. The bigger weakness is definitely the power play, but I think they can get by without it. And I know we've been saying this for seemingly 2 months now, it's not going to stay this bad forever. At some point you'd think it's going to turn around, whereas goaltending, I guess it's the opposite. You worry that it's about to shift at any given minute.
How long do you think the leash is on Jack Campbell?
I think that it's fairly long. I think that Freddie Anderson is probably going to get the start in the back-to-back you're going to see in the first round, but I don't think that I think that short of Jack Campbell throwing up all over himself, there's not really anything Freddie can do to kind of get back the net. I think that Jack Campbell is going to be the guy and have the chance until the Leafs kind of have their back up against the wall because of his play. Not to say that I expect that to happen, but that's what I think it would take. Like, I think the Leafs would have to find themselves in a 2-0 hole or a 3-1 hole or something like that before they really think about making that change, because it's not so much about Campbell's been unassailable. It's just Freddie, all the stuff we've said, he hasn't played an NHL game in, 2 months before yesterday. It's slow starter. It's unsure of his own playoff record. So that's why I think it's a pretty sizable leash for Campbell.
I don't necessarily agree with you when you say the leash is particularly long. I don't think it is at all. I think if Jack Campbell lets in a couple soft goals and somehow, some way, the Leafs lose game one of the Habs, I think we can see Freddie Anderson in game two. I really believe that. I don't know. He's a guy that obviously, listen, teams that have had some inexperienced goaltenders have went on to win the Stanley Cup. The Pittsburgh Penguins and Matt Murray are a great example recently. We saw what the Capitals did with Grubauer and Holtby. Grubauer started the playoffs, Holtby finished it off, and they won the Stanley Cup. We've seen this time and time again. It does happen in the NHL. Mm-hmm. But Jack Campbell's never played in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Obviously, nerves are a thing, and admittedly so. He's a guy that's way too hard on himself if he does let in a bad goal. If he lets a bad one in early, does that rattle his confidence in a potential game one loss? I don't know, but I just don't think the leash is that long, and I think he might know that as well. The Leafs can play this how they want. They say, oh, no, the leash is fine. We'll just give Jack Campbell the net. This is such a must-win, get to the at least Final Four for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They've never had this good of an opportunity to get to the Final Four in the NHL, and this is their time to do that. And I don't think they have any chance or have the luxury to let kind of Jack Campbell figure things out. Are the Leafs an overwhelming favorite against Montreal? They absolutely are. But does Jack Campbell have a long leash? I don't really think so, Guns.
Yeah, I don't. It's not so much about the faith they have in Jack Campbell. It's the lack of a recent track record from either of the guys behind him. And you know, not that we expect Riddick to get any games here, but it's the kind of lack of recent success for Anderson. It's just the idea of the guy's played one NHL game in 2 months, and you're gonna throw him in there to potentially, you know, save your season or turn things around. It's just a scary proposition, and that's why I think it's gonna be somewhat long for Campbell. But I completely see what you're saying there, that you know, with his lack of a track record, and I think the point you make about him, how he talks about himself, it definitely should play into it a little bit. He's tried to alter that, but just because you're not saying it and we're not hearing it doesn't mean he's still not kind of thinking that and second guessing himself. So I hear what you're saying. It all goes back to me for Anderson, and just it's the guy's had one game, and you're going to throw him into potentially a playoff game where you're down in a game or you're down in a series. I really can't see it happening unless Campbell, you know, completely throws up on himself.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It gets going next Thursday, finally. Leafs and Habs in the Stanley Cup playoffs for the first time since 1979. If you haven't heard that, the Leafs and Habs will play in the Stanley Cup playoffs for the first time since 1979. I have Flames on my mind for some reason because they have to play these meaningless games against the Vancouver Canucks. Take the underdog in those games if you like to bet on hockey games, because why the hell wouldn't you? There's value all over the place. Brent, something happened today that affects all of us. Premier Doug Ford spoke today, extended the lockdown till June 2nd. And with that, no golf. Mm-hmm. Along with it. And this is turning out to be such a polarizing topic among people, especially on social media. People saying, forget you, golf. There's more important things. And then golf people are coming back with the science saying golf is actually safe to partake in. And what Premier Ford today said kind of put a... I couldn't help but laugh. You know when you LOL, you actually laugh out loud when you're watching something, and people will overuse that. Wait, because did you really LOL just now? No, you didn't. No, I laughed out loud when I heard Premier Ford said, it's about, and I'm paraphrasing, it's about, you know, buddies having beers after the round. What are you talking about? I think a lot of us have been responsible during this pandemic when it comes to golfing, especially if you book your tee time ahead of time and you've paid for it. You literally show up in your car by yourself at the golf course, you pull out your clubs, you go to the first tee, and you start playing golf socially distant. I don't know where this is from, and I'm sure it's happened where people are maybe even gathering in a parking lot, but don't let science get in the way of things, Guns, because we know Ontario is the only jurisdiction on this beautiful blue planet we call Earth that isn't allowed to golf. And this piece from the New York Times came out. The CDC in the United States has said that actually are bad. The chances of you catching the coronavirus outside are maybe 1%, and maybe even fewer than 0.1%. If that's in fact the case, that it's 0.1% chance of you contracting the coronavirus, why the hell aren't outdoor activities open? And please don't tell me about, well, it's about getting there. It's about people with mobility issues. Come on, man. 0.1% of you, that's your chance for getting the coronavirus outside today, right now. Brent Gunning.
That It drives me nuts, okay? So I've been hosting the golf show with Hugh Burrell. It seems like every Saturday I tie a nice tidy bow on my outrage, and then seemingly every week there's an announcement about, you know what, let me twist the knife just a little bit more, golfers. You mentioned the science. It's people keep quoting it. It doesn't matter. You can quote anything you want. You can quote voodoo. You can quote Star Trek facts. You can quote Star Wars, whatever you want. It does not matter. They've made the decision. They're not going to back down from it. Quick anecdote, the thing that drove me the most insane, as I thought it would be that the buddies go out and golf and have a few pops. But the health minister actually got asked about lineups at garden centers, and she said she would like people to shop online, but this is a very important time for gardeners. Oh, I'm sorry. Do people not like to golf in May and into June? Driving me nuts. And the science, you laid it out. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. They're not going to listen to the science. They feel like they've taken too many hits on this and they're tired of taking them. And guess what? I don't know why they wouldn't just reverse course, because it would allow the hits to stop, because they're going to keep coming until they let us golf. Oh my heavens. Get so fired up every time I talk about this.
Yeah. 14 months now into this pandemic. I'm tired of the word optics. I just am. I don't care about optics anymore. I need facts. I don't care what it looks like, what people think. At this point, we're all so tired of all of this. And generally, Brent, a lot of us have been following all the rules. And for them to shut down a lot of outdoor businesses, tennis courts can't open, like tennis. You live with somebody in your own home. You can't go out to a tennis court and hit the ball back and forth. Like, that's dangerous. In what world is that dangerous? In fact, it's not dangerous. There's a less than 0.1% of you actually getting the coronavirus outside. I don't understand why you crush businesses that can open safely. I feel for a ton of businesses out there that are shut down. Let's not forget people who work in the service industry, people who cut hair, people who work in salons. Like, it just, this has been a terrible, terrible 14 months. And at this point, I'm tired of optics. When this pandemic first came out, there was a lot of uncertainty, a lot of fear. We didn't really know a lot of things about this virus. And I am definitely not minimizing what this virus means and what it means to our healthcare professionals who are just stressed to the bone here dealing with this pandemic, how ICUs are filled up. I'm not advocating for you to go out there and fill up your local Legion and have beers and watch the Leafs and Habs play because you want freedom. I'm not advocating for that. I'm just saying, if your business is able to operate safely in a pandemic, you should be able to, and to hell with optics. I don't care what type of business it is.
I'm so happy to hear you say that, because that's the thing. I think people hear certain people screaming, let us play golf, let us play tennis, let us play pickleball, and they say, oh, you don't care, you're just an anti-lockdown, anti-masker. Absolutely not. I've barely left my house since this all took over. I've been working remote. I've been barely doing groceries. It's like, I've been taking this extremely seriously, but you laid it out there. The facts have proven that there are so many things you can do safe. And again, forget about me for a second. I mean, I never will. I'm extremely selfish and want to put myself first. But you mentioned it. Think about all those small business owners. I've heard this premier a billion times. Oh, my, weep for the little guy. I care so much about him. Well, I mean, except for this like giant subsect of the province, I don't care about those little guys at all. It drives me nuts. And you said it, if you can do it safely, let us do it safely. And please don't take this as an anti-lockdown, anti-mask, anti-vaccine, because that's not what it is. I am so pro for just about all of those things. The lockdowns need to be shifted in the way we do it, though. It's driving me nuts, and the fact that there's no rhyme or reason to it, it sets me off even more.
And that's the most frustrating thing, right? That what have we been told the whole time during this? You got to listen to the science. Well, the science literally says it's you literally have a 1 in 1,000 chance of contracting the coronavirus outside. That's what the Center for Disease Control in the United States says. That's what your chances of contracting the virus are outside. Rough,
yeah,
maybe 1 in 1,000. They're saying it could even be below 0.1%, but we can't golf safely.
Nope.
Because Doug Ford's buddies. And again, I'm not political. You know that. I don't get political. I like facts. And the facts to me just don't add up when it comes to golf or any other outdoor activity. Even putting circles in Trinity Bellwoods, park again. Like, the science, literally, you can't get the virus outside. You can't. Like,
one last
is that
thing
even
for
necessary?
Me. Honestly, one last thing for me on this. It's like, what do we always say about GMs in sports is don't listen to the fans or you'll be kind of sitting with them.
Yeah, and it that's seems a like Bill that's Parcells adage, I think.
Yeah,
and when it you seems start like listening to the fans, you sit with them. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it feels like, and I know I'm telling him to listen to me, so maybe I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth, but the guy who looks a little like Bill Parcells should probably listen to that adage and start listening to the experts that he surrounded himself with.
Yeah, I don't know. Listen, you and I are in media for a reason. We're dumbos. We're not actually smart enough to be doing real meaningful work, so we decided to get into sports media, which is fine. The real smart people are making these big decisions and actually helping people out during this pandemic, but the science says it's safe to be outside during a pandemic, so let's not just have everybody inside for the next 2 weeks when the weather is going to be absolutely gorgeous and there's really no fear to be outside during this. Okay, enough of that. Enough of this golf. It's just not happening until June 2nd. And I'm definitely not. I saw this thing on Twitter as well, Guns, that golf courses around the province, there's like 12 of them getting together and want to start golfing. I'm not into that. Like, that's, I don't need rogue golf courses and another like $150 billion fine or whatever it is that Corson Tilsonburg got from the government, which I bet you they'll never even end up paying. But whatever, it's just ridiculous. Okay, straight ahead, Blue Jays sweep away the Atlanta Braves. You know the Braves were a team that were up 3-1 on the Dodgers last year during the baseball playoffs.
I recall.
The Blue Jays just swept six straight games against the Braves thanks to the 8-1 win today. Shai Davidi, straight ahead, baseball columnist for Sportsnet.ca. In fact, Caitlin McGrath will join us at 7:25.
Going to the lefty.
Yeah, she's pinch hitting for us late. Shai Davidi can make it. So Caitlin McGrath will join us straight ahead to talk some Blue Jays. It is Sportsnet tonight, George and Brent. On until the Raptors at the top of the hour. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The abbreviated edition of Sportsnet tonight, George Russick, Brent Gunning here. At the top of the hour, we hand it over to Eric Smith and Paul Jones. Raptors and Bulls, breaking news from the Raptors PR, Brent. Chris Boucher available. Aaron Baines, hold on to your hats if you're wearing one. Upgraded to probable. We might see Aaron Baines tonight for the Raptors. Super pumped up for that.
Yep. I would like to see Aaron Baines play the final few games this season as a Raptor, and then maybe never again.
Again, God bless Aaron Baines and the Aaron Baines fan club, but it'll go down as one of the worst free agent signings in the history of the Toronto Raptors. That's fine, because you can't hit a home run every time. Sometimes you have to ground out to first base. Caitlin McGrath, Blue Jays writer for The Athletic, joins us after Toronto's big 8-4 series sweeping win over the Atlanta Braves. Caitlin, good evening. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Thanks for jumping on short notice. With all the injuries the Blue Jays have suffered in the rotation, George Springer seemingly unavailable for the entire season, and the difficult part of their schedule, at least before the All-Star break's already been played, I can't tell you how impressed I am that this team is four games over 500. It's not really a question. It's more of a statement.
Yeah, well, you know, I was looking kind of back at the like win-loss record and looking at like, you know, overall the team like wasn't really in a rhythm at any point this season. Like, I was looking back and like the only sweep they had before was Atlanta. And the reason I was looking back was it kind of felt like the team was starting to gel. And so ahead of the series, I kind of wanted to look like, do they have any momentum? Like, at any point have they had any momentum this season? It hasn't felt like they had, because there's been so many injuries, and they'd win one, then they'd lose two, then they'd win one, then they'd lose two, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But now it actually feels like they've kind of built some momentum. The lineup is really clicking. Mind you, not everybody is clicking, but enough people, like enough guys, like Bo, Bichette, Vlad has been hot all year, basically. Oscar Hernandez is hitting. Randall Grichuk, he's been kind of slower the last couple of games, but overall he's been really good. You know, Kevin Biggio starting to come on too. So you're starting to see the lineup click a little bit, and the pitching has been great all year. The bullpen's been excellent. The defense, actually, which was like a major storyline to start the year being kind of sloppy, has actually been really good lately. So it does feel like they're kind of building momentum a little bit. And as you say, like, they have faced some pretty good teams to start the year, and they've had a tough schedule because they've been on the road a lot. And so now they're heading back home, and they do seem to be a team that's quite confident right now.
Yeah, and I mean, you can easily see why. I mean, George made the point earlier in the show, like, this Braves team, very talented, a lot of good young players. They were up on the Dodgers last year in the postseason. You know, you mentioned how deep this lineup is and how you know, well it's clicking. It's only going to get better whenever George Springer does rejoin the group. I mean, we know this is going to be a fluid situation as the season goes on, but if he were back tomorrow, which he's not, it looks to me like it'd be Gurriel who's kind of shaping out to be the odd man out there, because it feels like he just can't take Grichuk out the way he's been playing.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, it's probably not a conversation that we're going to be having for a couple weeks. I mean, I don't even really remember what the timeline was for George Springer. I think it was kind of like up in the air, right? And I think at this point, he's really only progressed to like running. So, and we all know what happened last time. So I don't think the Blue Jays are going to be rushing him this time. I think we've all learned the lesson there. So who knows what could happen in the time between we're talking right now and like 2 weeks. I've seen Gurriel go on insane tears and just like hit everything for like 2 weeks straight. So I kind of like, I'm not counting him out quite yet. And I think that it's still fairly early in the season. Still some guys take a little while to heat up, and we've seen Gurriel kind of like turn a switch and be able to hit really well. Yes, right now I think he would be the odd man out, but like I say, I think it could change in a couple weeks' time when maybe we're having that conversation about what you do with George Springer.
Kaylin, I love looking ahead to George Springer returning, even though the team has done fantastic in his absence. We're all still looking forward to it. And clearly, he'll be the leadoff hitter when he comes back here. Marcus Semien on a 12-game hit streak. He seems to be really settling in here now with the Blue Jays. Where does Marcus Semien ultimately hit when George Springer comes back, in your opinion? Or do they just move everybody down a spot?
I think they'll probably move him down further, just because I think they really like the Bo, Vlad, and Teoscar Hernandez in the 2-3-4 spot. Bo's been hitting number two for a while now, and I think he kind of suits that spot, and then you really like to have Vlad and Teoscar back-to-back there. I mean, yeah, you could just move everyone down. I mean, it's fine. They're a good lineup. You can't really mess it up. Like, as you know, any way you want to arrange it, it's probably going to do pretty well. Like, the difference between, like, one lineup configuration and another is, like, minuscule if you really, like, break it down. But to your question, I think actually it's interesting, and I don't know that this has anything to do with it, but you look at how he started the year. Marcus Semien was not looking like he was comfortable in the lead-up spot at all. Charlie moved him down to like 5-6, sometimes 7th hitter, I think maybe. Then he started getting things going. He's actually been fairly solid for a few weeks now. And then they moved him back to the top of the lineup when George Springer went out, and he's kind of just continued being very solid. So I think actually he kind of figured it out, and it doesn't really matter where you hit him. And I think if he went down and you pushed everyone down and put him in like the 5 or 6 or even 7 spot, it would suit him there as well.
I do want to take a look at the kind of catching spot today. Both guys actually got knocks. Rare when you can say that for one of them, let alone both. Do you think that situation's kind of starting to stabilize itself a little more? Do you think McGuire's actually maybe applied a little more pressure to Jansen than, I mean, it feels that way to me, than I would have expected?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, for both of them, there's really nowhere to go, because they know that Kirk is on the 60-day IL, so he's really not going to be coming back until July. I think he'd be eligible start of July, and then who knows when he'll actually be back. And then we've obviously seen like the Blue Jays want Riley Adams to spend some time in AAA, because they didn't even use him when he was in their lineup, because I think they didn't want to expose him to the majors. So both Jansen and McGuire do have a bit of runway here to kind of figure it out. I mean, I'd be fairly shocked if there was any sort of movement in the catcher position, because there's really nowhere to go other than like if one of them was to be injured, and then they'd have to figure out an alternative. But yeah, like I think that certainly they could help put pressure on each other. It's maybe less pressure to just kind of know that they have that runway. McGuire could, you know, maybe it's less pressure for McGuire in the sense that, like, he's been DFA'd now. Like, you know, he's gone through it, right? He's gone through the worst of it. He's been DFA'd. He didn't get picked up. He stayed with the Jays. Now he's back up in the majors. Like, you might kind of feel a bit like freer at that point, right? It's like you've kind of been through the worst of it. Now you've kind of had a second life or third life or whatever you want to call it. So I do think that it's actually interesting to watch the catching situation because it's still almost like a no pressure situation for them right now, as much as a no pressure situation can exist in the major leagues.
Caitlin McGrath covers the Blue Jays for The Athletic, joining us here on Sportsnet tonight. George and Brent, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Caitlin, we saw it again today. The lineup was terrific. The bullpen continues to shine. One of probably the biggest pleasant surprise of the season on how good the bullpen's been. And I kind of worry that where the starting pitching has been, you don't want this bullpen overtaxed. When Ross and Mark watch this team and how dynamic they can be offensively, do you think that pushes them a little bit to maybe go out there and be active on the trade market to finally acquire some starting pitching for this team? Because I think we're at the point, and obviously there's still a ton of season to go, but the Blue Jays don't need good starting pitching. They just need okay starting pitching to potentially be a wild card with the bullpen in this lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I think even before a pitch was thrown this season, Ross and Mark should have been looking ahead to the trade deadline and planning to acquire a starter. I think it's clear that starting pitching is still an area where this team needs to get better. I mean, the whole lineup can still get better and every area can still get better, but obviously starting pitching is still a spot. And they've done well to kind of survive the injuries that they've had. I think they've had some really solid starting pitching performances when they needed to. Like, you look at Ross Stripling today, the Blue Jays kind of needed him to go long. I mean, the bullpen was in fairly good shape because actually, like, Hyunjin Ryu went 7 innings, and I think Robbie Ray went 6 the day before. So the bullpen wasn't too taxed this series, but still, you want Ross Stripling to go out there and give you a solid outing, especially like in a National League park. And he did. It wasn't a great start for him, obviously. A first pitch home run and a couple knocks in the first inning, but he really rebounded with like one of his best starts. So that's been something that they've gotten a few times, kind of timely performances from their pitchers. But I would still say starting pitching is an area where they can get better. They should get better. And I think there will be probably quite a few sellers on the market. And we saw them last year get a couple starters. Obviously, Robbie Ray was one of them, Taiwan Walker. And so they can go out and they can get someone. It just sort of who it will be and when it will happen, kind of have to wait and get closer to that July date.
Yeah, I know. It feels like a bit of a weird thing to say, given how good Ray has been this year. I would hope, and you know, it all depends on what's on the market. I understand that, but I'd hope that the kind of ceiling of the guys they target is maybe a little higher than Ray or Walker. It just feels like, and I know this is the start of a long process, but you know, it just feels like it's such an obvious area of improvement that if you can, you know, not just tinker. I know George said you just need decent to okay. I go the other way. It feels like that's the one area of this team that can completely change the ceiling. You know, you go get a great bat or a plus defender, I don't know that it really changes a ton, but you go get a, you know, a true not ace but a front of the line starter, it feels like it could completely change everything.
I mean, I have seen the idea of Blue Jays trade for Max Scherzer on Twitter. I don't know if that's gonna happen. I don't know if the Nationals would want to do that. I don't know if Max Scherzer is the type of player that you simply don't trade. I don't know if Justin Verlander was traded. Like, every person can get traded. It's possible, right? It happens, but I would be interested to watch. I don't see that happening, but I don't know. That's probably a name that would be at the top of the list if it's possible, but I kind of agree with you that, like, I think last year the trade deadline, I mean, at the time, it is funny to say, because at the time Robbie Ray was, like, not at his best. Obviously, he was like walking a batter per inning, and the Blue Jays have really helped turn him around. So if you're trading for Robbie Ray, it's like how he's pitching this year, it would be quite an upgrade. But I guess, again, like, you just kind of have to wait and see like what the market is, who is available. You want to be careful at the trade deadline because you don't want to overspend for a starter, for a rental, like all that kind of stuff. Because as you say, like, this is really just the start of the window for the Blue Jays, not really sort of the time where they have to necessarily go all in here, right?
Yeah. How does Jordan Romano do just all of that every day. It feels like a lot. Like, it's just like I'm the type of person, I like to ease myself into a work day, you know, maybe make a little coffee, have a you know, relaxed play. From the jump of the third inning, we saw him up, he's doing his squats, he's pretending to throw. It just, and I'm kind of joking, but I'm also realizing this is a guy who's pretty early on in his career, and I do wonder if there's any type of, you know, world where he's going to have to alter what he does, because it feels like to do that, and he's not doing it 162 times a year, but to do that, I don't know, 90 some odd days where he's available, or potentially even more than that, it just seems like it's really, really taxing. And, you know, it's one thing to be doing all that in the doldrums of the season, but it feels like it could really, I don't know, maybe feel free to tell me I'm reading way too much into this, but it just feels like it's just doing too much. It just feels like it taxes you way more than it needs to. And I understand everyone has their process, but it feels like kind of pick your spots. The squats on the mound, great, but do you need to be up and at him in the third inning of every game you might expect to pitch in? I don't know. It feels like maybe there's a happy middle there.
I don't know. He has his process. I mean, I think he just likes to walk around there and be kind of active and get into the zone for when he thinks he's going to be pitching. And it seems to be working for him. I mean, I really haven't talked to him too much about his process. I know that he did kind of talk a lot with Ken Giles last year and picked his brain a lot and consulted with Ken Giles. And Ken Giles is, you know, a good closer to learn from. He was one of the best when he was doing it. And we've seen Jordan Romano kind of copy some of his moves. You talk about the squatting on the mound. Like, that's just sort of a Ken Giles patented move. So I don't know. I mean, I've never actually really thought it. I think you've thought more deeply about the pre-pitch routine of Jordan Romano than I have. But I don't know. I think I don't think it's any concern. I mean, I think he just kind of does his own thing. And I think it's actually kind of funny because when you talk to him in a non-game setting, he's actually a very friendly, seemingly kind of laid-back kind of guy. But he's very intense ahead of games and very intense on the mound. So it's quite the contrast. He really does kind of fit that role of a high-intensity reliever, though.
Yeah, it's fun to watch him pitch. Caitlin, before we let you go, you do a fantastic job of covering the Blue Jays. You're also a diehard tennis fan, and Denis Shapovalov had multiple match points today in Rome against Rafa Nadal, although the King of Clay prevailed. Nadal's kind of looked a little shaky on clay. Is this the Novak Djokovic fan talking in me that he looks a little vulnerable heading into Paris?
I have learned a lesson to just never consider Nadal vulnerable ahead of the French. I mean, it just feels like, I feel like there's been years where maybe he looked a little shaky on clay ahead of time, and then he just pulls it out in the French. I mean, he just hits another zone. It's you know, there's no real comparison to Nadal and the French. Like, the dominance that he has there is just something that we rarely see in sport. I don't know that we'll ever see again. It's remarkable. I think that sort of he's certainly on the back stretch of his career here, but I do still think there's potential for him to win another French or two. I mean, and I've said this on the radio before, and I think I've said it to you before. I will go on record to say that I do think Nadal will get the, like, all-time slams title. I think he'll take it ultimately.
I have to respectfully disagree. Caitlin McGrath, Blue Jays writer for The Athletic, Team Novak all the time, and Djokovic, the second best clay quarter on the planet. And we'll see in Paris, of course, but you're right. Don't underestimate that dude at the French Open. Caitlin, always great stuff. Thanks for jumping on short notice.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
There she goes, Caitlin McGrath. I don't know if you saw that match today with Denis.
I saw people tweeting about it.
Yeah, it was an electric factory. Good match, fun match to watch. And
has he switched? Is he going with the big headband now? Did I see that properly? Tennis sartorial things are very important to me. Is he switched out? He's no longer a hat guy.
Denis has been switching it up. He wore a hat at the end of the match too. It's just whatever he's feeling, because he does have that beautiful blonde flow that he likes to show off. And Nadal, you talk about, and it was funny when you said about Jordan Romano's pre-rituals and his mannerisms. Nobody is more like it is, you have to ignore it. I've been watching Nadal for years, and his pre-serve routine is just every time it's the same thing. And I like how he sweeps the hair away from his ear. Poor guy's losing his hair on top, and yet he's still sweeping it from his ear when he was a younger lad, when he had that full head of hair, when he busted onto the scene with his sleeveless tennis shirt and his
Caprice
long shorts as he won the French Open for the first time. But he looks a little vulnerable to me, Guns. I don't know. Maybe it's the Djokovic fan in me saying he looks a little vulnerable here, and maybe my boyfriend can steal it away after Nadal trounced him in the final at the French Open last year. But still, I hold out hope that maybe this is the year where Nadal falters in Paris. But that surface play so damn slow. Gotta hate the clay court season. Anyway, sorry, what?
The one record, I don't know. I'm not going to wade into the Grand Slam titles record. I'll let the tennis experts debate that one. I can confirm, without having researched it, there's no person who has picked more wedgies on television in the history of humanity than Rafael.
No question.
Just no chance.
Yeah, no question. And he's tied with Roger Federer for the all-time record. Djokovic just two behind. I think Novak Djokovic.
I like your boy's chances then. I don't know anything.
And he's younger.
Younger. I just feel like he'll outlast them. So there you go.
And Djokovic is also the best grass court player on the planet. Of course, we didn't have Wimbledon last year, but Djokovic would be the favorite heading into Wimbledon as well. And let's not forget Roger Federer is going to play too at the French Open. Looking forward to that.
I heard he's very classy. That's just what I've heard about Federer. Okay.
You know my disdain for Roger Federer.
I do. I know. That's why I had to say it.
You know. I just think he's an elitist. Anyway, okay. Straight ahead.
Hold on. The rich guy from Switzerland you think might be elitist? I don't know. Sounds crazy.
I'm telling you, there's nothing more than when Novak Djokovic beat him at the U.S. Open years and years ago, when Djokovic hit an incredibly, I would say, fortunate shot on match point, which ultimately flipped the match on his ear. And then Djokovic ended up beating Roger at the U.S. Open. And then in the post-match presser, Federer goes, "Oh, guys like that used to hit shots against me in junior because you're so invincible, Raj." Anyway, okay, I'll stop. It's just so eye-rolling. All right. Straight ahead, the one Toronto story that we're not nearly talking enough about. Not even on the radar for some reason. We'll do that next. One more segment to go. Sportsnet tonight, George and Brent, before we hand it over to Eric and Paul for Raptors and Bulls. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sportsnet tonight. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, George Russick, Brent Cunning here for another 6 minutes before I hand things over to Eric Smith and Paul Jones. Raptors and Bulls, Toronto playing their third last game of the season. Boucher and Baines are available and probable tonight, but Lowry, Siakam, VanVleet, Anunoby, Hood, and Watson have been ruled all out of this game. I don't know who's playing for the Raptors tonight. It's going to be a lot of Utah tonight, I think. But three games left in the season, Guns, and we're all wrapped up with what's going on with the Toronto Blue Jays and talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs and playing the Habs. I don't know if you know this, but they're playing the Habs for the first time in the playoffs since 1979. We're all wrapped up in those two big stories. Toronto Rock moving down to Hamilton, kind of underneath the radar. Toronto FC signs a new DP from Venezuela, looks dynamic, but hasn't really done anything yet. Kyle Lowry could be playing his final games here as a Toronto Raptor. Why are we not talking enough about this? There's three games left in the season. In your opinion, has Kyle Lowry played his final game in Toronto as a Raptor?
Yeah. I think so. I think the kiss of death for that was Victor Oladipo needing surgery, and that means he's not going to seamlessly fit in with the Heat, and I think that just kind of opens the door for them to pay Kyle Lowry whatever they want to pay him without the Raptors having to be involved in a sign-and-trade. I wish it weren't the case, but yeah, I do. I think that core of guys, and I'm including Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka and all of that group in it, playing their final games as a Raptor in Tampa in front of 2,500 people who couldn't care less about the team. It's one of the sadder sports stories in this market. And yeah, I do think he's probably played his last game as a Raptor in Toronto, definitely. And if you read between the lines of what Nick Nurse says, sounds like he might have just played it in general. I don't know that we should expect to see him the next two games.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It just feels like this breakup or divorce is a little easier because Kyle Lowry is so far away playing in Tampa Bay. It's like when you're in a relationship with somebody, a long-term relationship, and they move away to take a job somewhere, and you're like, we've been together so long, we can make this work. But eventually the distance is just too much to overcome.
I feel like
that's how this Kyle Lowry relationship with Raptors fans is. You love Kyle Lowry to death. There's no question. He's the GOAT of Toronto Raptors. He should be the one who gets his jersey retired first. They should build a statue outside of Scotiabank with him taking a charge, because that is Kyle Lowry in a nutshell. Fantastic Raptor, fantastic ambassador for the city. And you're right, it is a little sad that his final games as a Toronto Raptor, we think, maybe not, are being played in Tampa Bay in front of essentially nobody at Amalie Arena. And honestly, I don't think it's being talked enough about. Do you? Like, it's, I feel like everybody, or is everybody in denial, or people just, they know the Raptors are done, they're cooked, let's just see what happens here in the offseason.
So I think that that story is going to get you know, rekindled over the next couple of days, because it's kind of at the forefront. I think you hit the nail on the head completely. It's just, it's really sad. It's kind of hard to think about. And then the fact that the other two local teams have so much going on, be it the Blue Jays, it's been panic at the beginning, and now you think things are going really well. The Leafs have been rolling. They're heading into the playoffs. It's I don't know if you've heard. Since 1979, first time.
No way.
Leafs and Canadian. Yeah, I know.
79?
I just Googled that, yeah. And wow. And it just, it feels like there's enough other things to kind of distract you. Why would you? Like, why put your hand to the stove? You know it's hot. Let's not talk about it. Let's do all this when he eventually leaves this summer, or potentially, don't think it's going to happen, signs an extension. I just think you nailed it. It's out of sight, out of mind, and then you factor that in with the fact that the other two teams are going the way they are. I saw Michael Grange has a big piece up, a video piece with Sportsnet, so I think that that's going to kind of rekindle this a little bit. But yeah, it's just, I think you nailed it. It's the fact that they're not there, and it's the fact that the other teams are going so well that's what leads this to be the kind of not talked about story. And it's sad. We don't like to talk about things that make us sad unless we have to, and we don't necessarily have to right now. I think that's why it's happening.
Does the piece have the Boys to Men song, It's So Hard to Say Goodbye, underneath it the whole time?
I don't know. This will be a commercial break viewing for me. I saw it right as we were coming to air, but I hope so. I hope so, because that's the perfect soundtrack.
Yeah, it is. No question. You and I are doing the halftime for this game, and I'm really, it's going to be tough. I've done the halftime a few times for the Raptors. I've done a halftime during the playoffs, which is super exciting. This is, it's going to be a tough one. Tonight to do the halftime show with you, Brent, because I guess there'll be some storyline, maybe? Are we pulling at straws, I think? Grasping at straws. It's going to be a tough one, I think, for us to break down.
It'll feel a little bit different than when I did game one of the NBA Finals when Kyle Lowry was dominant. Yeah. It'll feel just a touch different, you know? But hey, that's what we are in this business. We're storytellers, and we're going to find a story
for
the first half and talk about it at halftime.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, and talk about how Aaron Baines did, and Utah, and
Boucher, yeah. Maybe, likely.
Yeah, maybe Malachi Flynn will do something awesome.
That'd be fun. That'd be fun.
Maybe he'll hit a few threes. We'll talk about that.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to it.
Third last
game of the season. And I think if you would, real quick here, I think if you would hit the truth serum with everybody who covers the Raptors, I think they're a little relieved that the Raptors are done a little earlier this year after being long playoff runs since 2014.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. It was fun. Thanks to Caitlin McGrath for pinch hitting on the fly for us earlier on. That's it for us. We'll be back during the Raptors halftime. Enjoy Raps and Bowls straight ahead on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.